If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch University. Murdoch University helps us make the show every week. Coming up, if you're interested in making a podcast like Pixel Sift, you can check out the Murdoch University Open Day, which is from 9 to 3pm on July the 30th if you're here in Western Australia. But if not, come along, you know, make a trip over to WA. It's lovely at this time of year. That's at the Murdoch South Street campus. You can come and check out the studios like the one we're recording in at this very moment. But there's also TV studios and virtual reality displays, and last year there was Japanese art and calligraphy and all of that sort of thing. Performance at 2pm by Thelma Plum. If you've been listening to Triple J, you'll know Thelma Plum very well. You can win a VIP experience for you and a mate to any Perth Arena concert. You can choose from Harry Styles, Katy Perry, The Weeknd, Bruno Mars, and more. All of that if you come on down to the Murdoch University Open Day. Murdoch University proudly sponsoring Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. It's a video game show. We talk about games, we talk about culture, we talk about art, we talk about all sorts of things. And we do that every fortnight for you on pixelsift.com.au and live on Twitch if you're watching there. Mm-hmm. This week, I'm joined by the frequently absent but now returned Scott.
Can you believe it?
He's back. He's back. He hasn't been here for a while, but he's back again.
It's good to be back.
We thought he got in trouble after the Last of Us comment, but he's back now.
Yeah, I'm back to hate on all your favourite games.
And Mitch, of course, is here as well. Thanks to Nick as well, who's making the video stuff work. We're also joined this week by Anthony Sweet and Paul Turbot. You're there from Perth's Black Lab Games, and they're going to be telling us all about their brand new game, Battlestar Galactica Deadlock. Paul, Anthony, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us on.
It's great to have you. We're going to hear all about your game a little bit later on the show. But what else are we checking out today?
We are checking out games on demand services. Is a Netflix-like service for games the solution to the issue of exposure among indie developers? We'll check it out.
Yep. And finally, we'll be taking a look at the different ways we play games, and be it the shortcuts through maps, exploitation of certain bugs, or the slight abuse of the save mechanic.
All that and more coming up later in the show. Let's jump in, though, shall we?
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
Netflix is one of the most popular subscription services on the net, and it is one of the reasons why people are watching different types of shows that they might not actually usually go for or even be able to, obtain. So could video games benefit from a similar service? Games on demand services such as Jump is aiming to answer that question and supply that service.
So Jump has come out relatively in the last couple of weeks or so, basically pitching themselves at this Netflix for games, trying to solve a problem with curation, especially in indie games where it's kind of difficult to rise out of the, I guess, there's a big crop of indie games to kind of find your place within. And it's trying to create the service where people can get nicely curated subscription on demand indie games. You can jump in and play whatever little bits and pieces you'd like to play. Not the only subscription sort of game service that's come about. Microsoft just announced that they're having a big back catalog that you can now get access to. EA Access, of course, as well, is another service that's available from one of the publishers directly.
There's a service back a few years ago that was also very similar to that, like doing the reruns type games, old games and stuff, Rock You. a little bit like the cable TV situation in America. But it's funny about this jump and them referring to themselves as Netflix video games type thing. Because when I'm describing to non-video game players anyway, you know, Steam and all these other systems that are in place, I kind of use that as a description. But it isn't close, especially not as close as Jump. It looks like it, you know, it looks like something that could definitely take off anywhere.
So, in regards to this, there are kind of two types of services that you want to consider. There's cloud gaming or gaming on demand, which is what we've been talking about here, which is where you kind of download, I mean, like, it allows you to like kind of stream the data onto your PC play the game.
It's sort of, it does the processing before it gets to you. Yeah. It's done by some kind of a, you know, remote. I obviously don't know too much about it as far as the technical side of things and how it exactly works. But yeah, all the processing is done by a different computer somewhere else. And they basically, like you said, just stream the final thing to you.
Yep. And then the other one is file streaming. So, or progressive downloading, which like it just download. It kind of like is almost like Miniclip and things like that used to be back in the day where you just go and play a Flash game online. It's kind of like that.
Paul, Anthony, you guys have made a number of games now. Would a service like this be something that you would be interested in? Do you think there is a value for a service for like a subscription-based on-demand games service?
I think there's definitely some value in it, but I think it's from a developer's point of view, it's probably going to be more useful for older games, not necessarily new releases. I have to admit I'm not very familiar with the business model for these things at the moment. So I probably need to know a bit more about that to really say too much more about it than that. But definitely I can see a place for sort of games you've released and they've sort of fallen by the wayside and they're not sort of current titles anymore and just sort of helping to make them stay relevant and help you find a new audience for your titles. So there's probably some value, yeah.
Absolutely. Jump have actually said that you know, they're not trying to take away from whatever already exists especially for indie developers. They're more looking for this to work side by side. And exactly like you said, maybe launch somewhere else, but then bring it over to Jump when things have kind of quietened down a little bit. And this is the place where your game will get the podium it deserves and the longevity of it, I guess.
So, in regards to the business model, they I'm just having a look at this article here, and it's a $10 monthly fee for access to their library.
Yep.
So it's quite similar to Netflix. I'm pretty sure that's American.
Available with the PC, Vive, Rift, everything, you know, that are, you know, the other kind of indie sources with.
I tried out this platform last night, and basically there's a number of games that you can try in the beta at the moment, and it does sort of work a little bit like Netflix in that there's sort of, when you click on the game you want to play, there's a loading bar, and when it loads up, the game is ready to go.
Yeah,
there was no... How long does it take, I was wondering, because they say 20 seconds or so.
Well, 20 seconds or so, probably not if you're based in Perth.
Yeah.
But,
no. Okay, I had a slightly better experience than that. Like, it was surprising how seamless it was. I expected there to be a slight install, maybe, or like a, I don't know, just some kind of thing that I would need to approve for to allow it to do something to my computer, but no, it doesn't do anything to your computer. Well, it just runs off the program.
It kind of runs all off of the back of a few years ago when Unity announced their WebGL export.
I see.
It all kind of is run under that guise.
You don't talk about game engines this week. Haven't you seen the controversy about game engines?
That makes me wonder how powerful can, like, how graphically intense or big games can possibly be on this service. It's all well and good for, like a roguelite kind of game, which I tried to play, which I was playing this morning. But what if, like, you wanted to stream a more mainstream game?
PlayStation have done something similar with their PlayStation 3 titles. There was a service where you could actually stream them directly to your PlayStation 4, where you could play them like that. It's just remoting in. It's like playing using LogMeIn or Hamachi or any of those services to kind of remote into someone. TeamViewer even, that's the way to do it. Steam, the Steam Link actually uses something similar for a computer in your home where you can stream across your network and then play with a controller locally on a TV rather.
That's pretty great.
Blizzard do something pretty cool when you're installing a game. You can kind of start playing it before it's done, and that might help as well.
Yeah, I've actually seen that before. Maybe it was just Blizzard specific. I don't remember before. But and also, I like it when they're doing that for updates. Unfortunately, most of the games I've been playing at the moment are online, so that doesn't really play into it.
The big thing I wonder about this is this service probably will be great for people with older games in the early days, but as it becomes more popular and then more people get their games onto the platform, you're going to run into the same issues that even Netflix has, right? So Netflix has a lot of stuff, but you generally will probably only watch a small segment of that. And it's very difficult to find the gems within the noise of you know, too much choice in a way. So
that's exactly right. Like they say it's going to start with 100 games at launch, but much like the Netflix in Australia versus, say, the Netflix that you can get from America, we have a lot of stuff on there, but it's a lot of shit. Like, it's a lot of stuff I don't want to watch. Unfortunately, there's going to be a draw for them to do that monetary-wise, you know, if they kind of lose their way, I guess. Also, it sounds like they come from a good place, you know, with their whole business model is great.
Also, I think that the draw of Netflix to the average person is they get pulled in by the big movies and the big TV shows that are already on there and then discover the Netflix originals while they have Netflix. Very few people actually go for, initially anyway, for the original content.
Absolutely.
So maybe this service might need like a Call of Duty on there to begin with. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
It just makes me a little bit apprehensive as to, I don't know, hopeful. But just wondering if it's feasible to just have the indie library.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I think this is an area that lots of people are very interested to get into.
Good new territory.
A variety of different publishers as internet gets better and better and it becomes easier to stream games from across the world.
And this isn't the same. First thing, I forgot to mention it completely. But remember when there was the SNES and they had that kind of the Japanese game stream that you could get and you had specials... I don't know, levels of Zelda that you could play. And they're only available through that.
Yeah, and that actually ran on TV broadcast.
It did.
And
you had to be tuned in at that exact time. Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't get it.
It was in the TV guide when you would actually
download. That sounds awful.
Sounds so amazing.
We were talking about early 90s. Yeah. So this is like pre-home internet.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means.
The 90s.
And I've seen clips of it and it streamed well.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
Anyways.
Look, there'll be more to talk about this one. Let's jump into our next topic right now.
Pixel Sift. Pixel Sift. No, seriously, Pixel Sift. No, seriously.
Pixel Sift.
We're joined by Paul Turbett and Anthony Sweet. They're from Perth's Black Lab Games. You're working on a highly anticipated game. It's called Battlescar Galactica Deadlock. It's very exciting, and Anthony, I remember we had you on the show at Perth Games Fest late last year, and you had a wry smile on your face when I said, "What projects are you working on?"
I still do.
You do. Still there. Yeah, still always there.
You should have seen him. It was just like,
he was like, "Well, you know." Anyway, it doesn't really translate in audio. But Anthony, tell me a little bit about, and Paul as well, what is it like to now have this project out in the wild? And you just had a big public AMA this morning. What's it like to see the sort of reactions from people who are excited and very interested in this game?
It's super gratifying. Like, we've kept this under our hats for quite a long time, and it was quite hard to just not be able to talk about it openly. Whenever we'd go to a game dev meetup or even just around a barbecue, people would ask me, you know, what are you working on? You can't actually say what it is, even though, you know, like you just bursting at the seams to say, oh my God, it's Battlestar Galactica. So it's super gratifying now to know that it's out in the public and people are just as excited about it as we are. It's quite fun.
It's a big franchise. It's one that people are very engaged with, you know, has a whole bunch of new fans because of the reimagined series that came out a couple of years ago. Is it daunting jumping into a franchise like this that people have such a strong love for and a strong interest in all the little bits and pieces that make up the universe of Battlestar Galactica?
It wasn't at first. When the opportunity first came up, we jumped at it pretty quickly and like there wasn't too much thought. It's like, you know, we absolutely have to do this. It wasn't until we'd been working on it for a little while we sort of started to realize what we were working with. And yeah, since then it has gotten a bit more, I wouldn't say daunting, but we just want to make sure we do a good job and make sure that the fans of the series are happy with the game we make. So
yeah, and
no pressure.
A good thing for us as well is that we were fans of the series before we started working on the game. So, we're kind of holding ourselves to that same level of critique where, like, we want to make sure it feels authentic. Authenticity has been, like, one of the pillars of this project for us. And, you know, we really hope that we're hitting that authentic mark for people. But as fans as well, like, we know how important that can be.
How did this opportunity come to you? This is a big franchise. I'm sure there's plenty of people who'd love to have a crack at making a game for Battlestar Galactica. How did it all come about?
I actually have to give a lot of credit here to our publishers. I'm Slytherin. They're a specialty publisher that work in the strategy game space. We worked with them previously on our last game, which was Starhammer, The Vanguard Prophecy. And after we finished that, we were sort of talking about some ideas for some different projects. And they just asked, you know, at a conference one time, you know, are there any IPs you'd be interested in working with? And I didn't think too much about it, but I just sort of rattled off some names of some things that I really like and didn't think much more about it. And then they went and asked around and asked some questions and talked to some people and came back a bit later and said, there's an opportunity here if you want to do it. So we together a proposal on what we're looking to make, and here we are.
Is it difficult jumping into this franchise? You know, are there rules and, I guess, law regulations that you have to follow?
Yes. I mean, like, there's kind of the official rules that we follow that, you know, we coordinated with NBC Universal. A lot of us, like, all of our stuff gets vetted by them to make sure we're on the right track. But then there's also that kind of secondary layer of, is it correct by what, is it correct by the fans? Like, is it authentic enough for those guys? It does feel like there's kind of two layers that we have to work on there, and it's always important that we make sure we get it correct for everyone.
Especially checking out that AMA today, it looks like you've got a lot of people that are going to be following the law quite a lot to the law.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Like, we've already got people questioning, like, the names of the classes of the ships and how, if we've got the right number of guns and the types of guns, and have we got the timing right. And, like, this is all stuff that we've researched quite extensively right from the very beginning of the project, because we just have to be confident that we can just stand up and say, you know, what we've written and what we've developed fits within the timeline, fits within the lore and the canon, and we're making this as close to the mark as we can.
Well, was the research up to you, or were you given some blueprints or some a law book or something like that to work from?
We had quite a number of sources, actually, yeah. We got information from all over the place. I mean, the main source, I guess, is the actual TV show itself. But, yeah, we also had a lot of good places to get some good research material as well, so.
Yeah, there's a wiki in particular, the Battlestar Wiki, and I really loved that website. Unfortunately, it's not up at the moment, but I love them just because they referenced and their sources for absolutely everything, all the way from if it was in the TV show, various podcasts that Ron Moore or David Icke did, whether they were getting it from various published books. Just being able to cite the sources has been really useful as well.
I've noticed that you've actually got a theatre and playwright director, Jessica Messenger, working with you on this one. How is that bringing outsiders in to help you with the story and other aspects, I assume?
Yeah, Jess came in to help out with the script for a little while. Basically, you know, we're a fairly small team, and when it comes down to the writing, I was the only person looking at the writing for a long time. So then it was great to be able to get Jess in. To get a second set of eyes, just, you know, to sanity check and let me know where I might have been going wrong with various things or where I might have been going right. And, you know, her unique perspective coming from a theatre perspective really opened up a bunch of the issues with the dialogue, for instance, that I had in the script. But it is really important as well, you know, like one of the big pillars of game development is collaboration. So the more people you can get working, the more creative input you can have. It's good.
You're working within an existing franchise, and you're making another space combat game off the back of sort of Starhammer as well. Which universe, for you, is it better to be able to have a universe that you can build completely from scratch and you can say every single rule that comes along, or do you like having a framework there that you can build upon?
Okay. I think they have their pros and their cons, like you said just then. Like, if you can take something from scratch and invent it, that's obviously a lot of fun. But, you know, working inside a framework that exists, if it's something that's, you know, really popular and that people really like, that's pretty gratifying as well. Probably more so. I think there's not much point in making up stuff if no one ever finds out about it. And a good thing about this versus Starhammer is that you know, Battlestar Galactica, the name has recognition. More people sort of care about it already, and it hasn't even come out yet. So from that respect, I think, yeah, I'm very happy to be working in this inside another franchise, this game.
Yeah. I think also creatively, like, the blank page is overrated. Like, constraints can help a creative endeavor so much. Already having established lore, already having established world, having established characters, like, those are good constraints to have, because that means you can push at the edges and try to find the really unique stuff, and while already having a lot of the groundwork set out for you.
I guess the number one question that I saw pop up today was, when is the game coming out? People are very excited to play it. How far along is the game, and when can people kind of expect to sort of start getting it into their hands and pilot Battlestars and send off Vipers and all of that sort of stuff into the world?
It's very far along. It's well into beta at the moment. We've been beta testing for a few months now. And I think the launch time frame is sort of very late in our winter here in Australia, so not too far away.
It's getting very, very close.
Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah. If you after an exact date, I can't say at the moment, because we actually haven't determined an exact date yet. So
fair enough. No, that's totally fine. Yeah. But it's late winter.
Sorry, I'm not trying to hide the date, since we actually don't even have it 100% confirmed ourselves yet. So, I think as soon as we get locked down, we'll definitely be letting everyone know.
Very exciting. Now, if people want to find out a bit more information about it, where's the best place for them to head to at the moment?
There's a page at slytherin.com/BSGDeadlock would be the best place to go.
And that's Slytherin with an E, isn't it, at the end?
That's right, yeah.
Yep. Not like the...
Like Slytherin.
Yes, exactly. No, like the lizard. Like the lizard.
Hey, guys, I have one last question.
Mm. Yeah.
Would the Starhammer ships be able to hold off the Cylons?
Oh, that's a good question. If I'm going to get super nerdy about this, the problem you've got there is that the Battlestar universe is all kinetic weaponry. Like, there's no lasers, it's all bullets and armor. Whereas, like, we got to cheat the Starhammer with lasers. So I feel like there's a slight advantage there, but also, you know, there's nothing more deadly in space than just a steel rod sent at couple of thousand kilometers per second, so I don't really know.
Any hope for like a crossover, like a Easter egg DLC?
Oh yeah, get some squid Cylons. Yeah,
that could be fun.
Yeah,
it's all very exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I think a lot of people are looking forward to it, based on watching some of the streams and the Reddit AMA today. It's called Battlestar Galactica Deadlock. It's made by Perth's Black Lab Games. We're still joined by Paul and Anthony from, well, probably not actually that far away. You're within the same state as us, but not
just around
in the same studio. But right now, though.
Just up the road.
Yeah, just up the road. We'll go see you afterwards. Right now, though, let's jump into our next topic.
Pixel Sim!
It's not Pixel Civ, it's Pixel Sift.
Pixel Civ! So sometimes we can be tempted to take a bit of a shortcut in a game, be it like a map, just running over the map in an interesting way, or abusing the save mechanic like I do in Pokemon every time I want to catch a legendary. So, I guess, how does this affect the way that we perceive games, and is this really in the spirit of what the developer intended?
This is one I want to throw to Anthony and Paul straight away.
Yeah.
Have you seen people play your games in ways that you haven't intended and thought, geez, that's good or bad?
Or wrong?
How does it make you feel?
Finished products or betas?
Oh, well, either.
Sorry, in joke. Yeah, actually, when Starhammer came out, we saw a few streams and kind of watching people play it, and not so much sort of getting around the mechanics and stuff like that, but it's just sometimes people, when you're developing it, you kind of have a particular thing in mind about how it actually works and how it plays. And then you do actually see people going, doing things, you know, yeah, I didn't actually think you would do that, but that's fine. So, yeah, happens sometimes.
As long as they're having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting sort of concept. One of the term that kind of popped up when we saw this one is this term called save scumming, which, you know, it sounds negative, but yeah, it's basically where you kind of take all risk out of a game entirely by saving at every point you have to make a hard decision. And if you've, you know, running up against the random number generator of choice in games, and it just kind of takes away any of that risk there. I'll have to admit, like in Fallout 4, they introduced a quick save within conversations, and I was quite the wordsmith, quite charismatic, never failed a conversation challenge in the whole game because of that. Yeah, I think it's a really sort of interesting concept to talk about. And we see many interesting things where people have kind of taken the games outside of what people have intended and turned it into something brand new.
Yeah, entirely new games in a lot of situations.
Like, I hate to bring Pokemon up again, but like there's like the Nuzlocke challenge, for example. Like if a Pokemon faints, then that's it for that boy.
Boy's gone.
So I guess it just creates a different way of playing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what entire modding communities are built on, you know, taking a game and making it something a little bit else. I mean, GTA is a huge one for it. I really like the mod where you be a police officer and you correctly obey
the law,
as far as police officers do anyway, if you want. And also with like GTA, we were talking about this earlier, Mitch and I, if you want to play GTA properly as like a citizen and driving in traffic and whatever, it's a lot better now in the newer ones, but in the older ones, like it just was not a thing. The cars, like, you know, NPCs would be ramming your car out of the way of the lights because you're not meant to be there. You know, you're not meant to be sitting at a red light. I thought that was rather funny that you were never, ever, ever meant to play the game like civilly.
I remember in the original Halo on Xbox One, there was a level called the Silent Cartographer. And
I know it well.
It's basically an island and there's a big beach around the whole island. And you actually get two warthogs at one point, and it's a co-op game and the warthogs are invincible. And my brother and I spent many hours just smashing the warthogs into each other, flipping, using the physics to throw each other into the sky. And yeah, that wasn't intended at all. But you couldn't drown and you couldn't be killed if you were knocked out of a car. So, you know, that wasn't part of the game, but it's still very enjoyable to do. So, yeah, a lot of people, you know, use this, especially in the speedrunning community as well.
Yeah, especially glitch speedrunning.
There's glitch speedrunning, but also there's, you know, the even not using glitches as well, like just using the timers based in games as well. Yeah. And they're, you know, walking in a particular pattern, walking on particular sprites or taking a certain number of steps to increment the counters to a certain point so that they get a certain result or within a range of predictable results in order to do that. So
you've got your two parties, you know, you've got the people exploiting it for whatever reason, which, you know, can have its negative traits. But then you've also got the whole, you know, nurturing of communities that evolve and exist around being able to do these strange things in games, like I said, like modding communities especially, you know, and that's a huge love and dedication to the game.
However, if you abuse passive mode in GTA, you're the worst. You're the worst person.
Worst kind of person.
Yep. There are words that we need to have you abuse passive mode in GTA 5.
I don't even know what that is.
Scott knows.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, it's really interesting sort of thing to think about. And people, I think often when you, in that sort of situation, you're talking about a multiplayer element where, you know, your particular behavior impacts on other people.
Quick scoping.
Yeah. All of that sort of thing, I think, is something that usually is sort of frowned upon. But
I'll talk about this in our Let's Play when we have played GTA, passive mode.
Any sort of exploit that makes it, you know, extremely unfair is frowned upon, basically. You know, your speedrunners and whatever are an exception because that's generally single player games. But yeah, your multiplayers when somebody is exploiting it, that's not cool.
Very true. Not cool. Thanks for that wise words there, Scott. Look,
we'll put that on a poster.
I'm being friendly this week.
Yeah. He's not taking down any beloved franchises this week. That's pretty much all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, Paul and Anthony, for joining us. We're super excited to play Battlestar Galactica Deadlock in late winter in WAE, in the Southern Hemisphere. You can check out all the links to that on our website, and that website is www.pixelsift.com.au. A big thank you to our sponsor, Murdoch University, who help us make the show every week. you can check out the open day. It's on the
30th of July.
Thank you, Scott.
From 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
He's got it memorized.
I do.
You can come into this very studio.
Yeah. You can be here.
Yeah.
Where we are.
I mean, I won't.
I will, though.
Scott will be here.
I will be here.
You can meet your favorite sifter, yes. Scott.
You can tell Scott how good Last of Us is.
Win me over.
Check out the performance at 2 p.m. by Thelma Plum. Thanks to Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting the show. And win yourself a VIP experience.
That's it.
At the Perth Arena.
Do it.
Mitch, we've got a bunch of other episodes, don't we?
Yes, you can go to our website to stream those. You can subscribe to our podcast on either iTunes and Pocket Casts or using the RSS link. And if you're listening to us exclusively on one of these platforms, just remind you, we go live every fortnight. And our next episode is on the 3rd of August.
And Scott, if people want to find us on social media.
Y'all can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
All great stuff. Thanks for joining us. We will see you guys this time next week.
Yeah.
For a Let's Play.
Let's Play. It's a surprise. We're going to find out. Tune in.
See you then. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Anthony.
See ya.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today at sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.